with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select.
You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast. I am Chris McPherson, joined alongside Fran Duffy. And Fran, it's been a wild first week of free agency. So the initial wave of that is in the books, and a lot of blockbuster moves going on around the league, not just from a free agency standpoint, but from a draft one as well.
Which we don't usually see at this time of year. Like when the Eagles traded up to, from 13 to 8?
13 to 8, correct.
From 13 to 8, and then from 8 to 2. That stuff happened in like mid-April.
Exactly.
A couple weeks out. We're over a month out, and we're seeing these trades happen, and it's pretty surprising. So we'll talk about it in Draft Buzz, but it's going to be interesting to see how this top four, top five of the draft plays out.
All right, we're
going to
discuss that. And also our interview with our Mr. Relevant this week is Patrick Rue, the Senior Bowl Scouting Coordinator. You know, does a lot of work behind the scenes in terms of scouting the prospects for the Senior Bowl, compiles a watch list along with Phil Savage, and then helps put that game together. So we're going to get his insight on some of the players who are at the Senior Bowl and how they've been performing in the pre-draft process. Our pick six, in light of what's happened in free agency and the trades, the six teams that control the draft, and then we get to your questions in our draft mailbag. But first up, Draft Buzz.
Now it's time for Draft Buzz.
All right, let's get things rolling here on Draft Buzz. And the big trade, the New York Jets moving up from number 6 to number 3, swapping with the Indianapolis Colts. The Jets sending not one, not two, but 3 second-round picks to move up a couple of spots. And the question now is, what will they do at number 3? And the Giants are really in the driver's seat there at number 2 because they can still field offers from other teams. And also, if they stay there and make a selection, that's going to dictate what the Jets end up getting there at number 3.
So the first thing that popped into my mind when I saw that the New York Jets traded up to number 3 was the Giants are taking a quarterback, because it wouldn't make any sense for the Jets to trade up to number 3 without knowing who they're going to get. At this point, it's very rare to see something like this happen for the number 3 pick. We saw the RG3 deal back when the Redskins traded up with the Rams, and they've got the number 2 pick, and all eyes were, hey, Andrew Luck's going number 1, we're going to get RG3 at number 2. That makes sense. When the Eagles trade up, they knew they were going to get Carson Wentz at 2. That makes sense.
It's funny because some people were like, did the Eagles? No, they pretty much
have an idea.
Jared Goff
is
going number 1.
Yeah, you have a pretty good idea. In this scenario, the Jets don't know. At least we don't think they know. And so either they do know that the Giants are staying put and they're going to select. And if the Giants are staying put, they're not staying put and declining all these offers for what's going to be multiple first-round picks, multiple second-round picks, to take a guard or a running back. As great as Quentin Nelson is, as great as Saquon Barkley is, you're not going to take Saquon Barkley at 2 when, on the other hand, you've got multiple high picks. That's just bad logic, and I don't feel like Dave Gettleman is going to go that route. I just don't feel like that. So if the Giants stay put at 2, they're going to take a quarterback, which means the Jets are going to get sloppy thirds in selection of what's going to be the third quarter, because there's going to be a quarterback at 1 to Cleveland. Cleveland has to take a quarterback now. That discussion's out the window. So the Browns have to take a quarterback. To me, the Giants are going to take a quarterback. Or if they do trade down, which is very possible that they do trade down, because I guess that's the other possibility, is that the Jets talked to the Giants about moving up to 2, and the Giants just wanted way too much, and the Colts said, hey, we'll take it for 3 second-round picks, and the Jets said, okay, this is the best we can do, 3 second-round picks, I don't have to give up a 1, sign me up, and we'll just get whatever's left. I don't know if I agree with that logic either.
The problem is, though, the price now has been set.
Yes.
The floor is set for what it's going to take to move up to number 2. The Giants can set as high as they want. But as you said at the top of the show, we still have a month to go.
Yes.
A lot can happen. A team can get desperate. A team might fall in love with a quarterback and realize, we got to get this guy. So opens up the door for a Buffalo, let's say, to sneak up there to number 2, especially within the division with the Jets, and get the guy that they want.
That's the problem. So like, I feel like this trade with the Jets really happened because the Bills traded up to number 12 last week. Like, I feel like that got the wheels turning in New York and was like, all right, the Bills are probably making a move up. Denver's in position. They're ahead of us to take a quarterback. We need to make sure, if we're going to make sure we get a quarterback, we got to get into the top three or four. And that might be their motivation. They, you know, the owner may have said, hey, you know what, guys, GM, head coach, you guys are going to be evaluated this year on their on your ability to get a quarterback. I don't care which one you get, go get one. And if that's the case, again, I don't know if I agree with that logic because they don't know. They may not like – I don't know what their evaluations are on all these quarterbacks. But if that's the order and, hey, you have to go get a quarterback, now they're in position to get one. So that's fair. But I think when the Bills moved up, I think that forced the wheels to turn with New York and the Jets moved up. So now there are a few teams. Like Denver, Denver may not get a quarterback now. Yeah. So they may trade up into two. You've got Cleveland sitting at four and the Giants sitting at two. Those are the two trade spots. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this all pans out. And we could see more movement. To me, if I'm Dave Gettleman, I'm holding out until the very last minute for the best possible offer, like, and would make teams desperate and panic.
Well, what happened last year? Who right. knows when it was worked out, but the Bears flip-flopped with the 49ers.
Exactly.
Just to get Mitchell Trubisky and gave up a boatload of picks.
Yep.
Now, at the end of the day, if, you know, for the Bears, if Trubisky turned out to be the guy, it's worth it. It was worth it for the Eagles to give up what it took to move up to number eight and then what it took to move up to number two. They've got their franchise guy, okay? Nobody's going to care down the road. I always think of the Jason Peters trade from 2009. Nobody cares the draft capital you gave up or that you gave him a long-term extension. He's a Hall of Fame tackle, okay? Plug and play, he's made the Pro Bowl pretty much every year that he's played, okay? Basically, I think it's like the Achilles injury that he was robbed of 2012. The only year he hasn't made the Pro Bowl since coming to Philadelphia. Outside of that, though, nobody's going to remember what you gave up. So if the Jets get their guy, you know what? It'll be, turn out to be the right move, okay? And you'll say 3 second-round picks, that's all it took. But if you don't get the guy, jobs are going to be lost at the end of the day. When it comes
and I think from an Eagles fan perspective, you're looking at the New York Giants, and I think most Eagles fans have come to grips with the fact that they were probably going to take Saquon Barkley. Now I think you're looking at, all right, they're either going to take a quarterback, and that's their quarterback of the future, or they're going to get a huge haul and still might get Saquon Barkley. Because I really feel like, gun to my head right now, quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. I think that's how it's going to go in this draft. I think you're going to see the combination of Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, and Baker Mayfield go in the first four picks.
You think someone moves up to four?
To four,
Cleveland's spot.
Cleveland would be smart to do that deal because now you're picking up even more picks,
of course,
you're still going to get a great player wherever you move back to. So I really feel like that's what's going to happen, is that all four of these quarterbacks are going to go 1, 2, 3, 4.
What helps the Eagles is that if those quarterbacks go 1 through 4, that pushes up Lamar Jackson's chances.
Yes, that's a good point. I actually didn't even think about that part of it.
Mason Rudolph maybe gets in there. You know, it's one of those quarterbacks we're not maybe not thinking of that were fringe first-round, early second-round guys. Teams that middle, late first-round might get desperate and say, you know, we've already missed out on the first wave. If we want to get in on the quarterback party at all, we've got to make it happen.
Because you think, like we said, there are going to be teams, Arizona, Miami, Denver, that are sitting on the outside looking in saying, like, man, like, it'd be nice if we got a young quarterback. And they're not going to get one of these first four. No. If they miss out, Lamar Jackson's the next guy up, and either they're going to take him somewhere in middle round one or they're going to trade back up into the end. I agree. That's a good point.
All right, let's go through some of the mock drafts. Bucky Brooks from NFL.com released one yesterday, and he has the Eagles taking Dallas Goedert, the small school FCS tight end from South Dakota State.
A guy that I still have to do more work on from this year. I loved him off of his junior film over the summer. To me, he looked like a three-down tight end, a guy that could be moved around a little bit. I know he's added a little bit of weight, so I don't know that he's moving quite to the level he was when I last watched him, but catches everything thrown his way, really got better as a route runner. I think he's got three-down potential.
All right, two guys here, Eric Galco, Sporting News, and Charlie Campbell from Walter Football. Both have the Eagles taken the athletic tackle from UCLA, Colton Miller.
Very athletic, has played both right and left tackle. A size, speed guy in terms of the offensive line position. He's a project, but certainly has physical tools that have a lot of people excited. I don't know that he's a first-round type of guy, but we'll see as the process unfolds.
All right, two other guys here. Chris Trapasso from CBS Sports. As the Eagles taken a wide receiver, James Washington. You're hearing a lot about DJ Moore, maybe DJ Chark, but he has them taking James Washington out of Oklahoma State.
Yeah, Trapasso has been in on both the Oklahoma State tandem of Mason Rudolph and James Washington as first-round picks over the course of the season. I think that it's unlikely that both go in round one. Washington is a player that I have liked, though, and I think that he's a good possession guy at the next level in terms of he's really good at the catch point. He's developing as a route runner. The routes that he did run at Oklahoma State, I think he ran them at a pretty good level. He still has some cleaning up to do there. He's not a burner, even though he averaged a boatload of yards per catch at the college level. He's not a burner, but I think that he's got the ability to be a nice possession guy on the outside.
All right, and last but not least here, a lot of fans are wondering why would the Eagles still be in play for a corner at 32, especially after trading for Darryl Worley. But Dan Kadar from SB Nation has the Eagles taking Louisville corner Jair Alexander.
And that's because Alexander can play in the slot. You lose Patrick Robinson, and we don't know what this cornerback rotation is going to look like this year. Alexander has plenty of experience in the slot. He would, by my guess, probably be the best player on the board if that were the case, if he did fall to 32. Love everything he brings. I mean, he's a little bit undersized, but he's a really good athlete. He is dynamic. He's good on the ball. He's instinctive. He's tough. There's the position versatility. He can play inside and outside. Jair Alexander is a really good player.
All right, that's going to do it for Draft Buzz. We're going to get to your questions in a little bit, but first, our Mr. Relevant, Patrick Wu from the Senior Bowl.
It's time for Mr. Relevant.
Really excited to have our guest here on the Journey to Draft podcast. This week's Mr. Relevant, Patrick Wu, the Senior Bowl scouting coordinator. You can follow him on Twitter at P_Wu. That's W-O-O. And Patrick, you do an amazing job. You've done this for the last 5 years, scouting the talent for the Senior Bowl. And this is something that once 1 year ends, the game for next season is already underway. You're already doing the groundwork for it. Can you just take us through the process of what's going on now that the combine's just wrapped up and you're looking ahead to that watch list released in August and the work that you have to go through to scout and mine the talent to figure out who you're going to put on the list before the start of the college football season, a list that the analysts and experts are all dying to see exactly, who are those diamonds in the rough, those guys that you have to keep an eye on in 2018?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, it's great to be back on with you guys, Chris and Fran. And number one, congratulations to you guys. You guys finally get a Super Bowl championship there in Philadelphia. Of course, my family's in that area. All of my friends from college are all Eagles fans, so I know a lot of people that are fired up. So congratulations to you guys and your entire organization. But to answer the question, Chris, we're always working towards next year. And I think it's always kind of a never-ending cycle because when you're watching these seniors, they're always underclassmen that stand out to you, whether you're watching the game on TV or you're watching the tape. There are always a multitude of players that stand out. So sometimes your focus gets taken away because there's an underclassman that really stands out, and you kind of jot that down and you remember those players moving forward when we get to that year's class. And, of course, when it's all said and done after the early declaration period for the NFL draft, you got to go back to the list and start crossing off all of the guys that ended up declaring for the NFL draft. When you really think about it, when you have over 100 players declaring early for the draft, that's almost an entire Reese's Senior Bowl roster that has left early for the NFL, so to speak. So we do take a hit in that regard, but it provides a lot of future opportunities for a lot of players moving into next season. So right now we're in spring mode after the combine. Of course, we're continuing to hit some pro days to continue to support the players that just came through the Reese's Senior Bowl. They're always forever a part of this Senior Bowl fraternity, and we're going to be there to support them, but also get an opportunity to meet with the coaches and pro liaisons about next year's class and attend a few spring practices and spring games here along the way as well. But we're building the list right now. It always gets bigger before it gets smaller. It's now above 500 players, and, of course, our official August release will be around 350 to 400 players as the cut-down process happens over the summer. And you mentioned it, Chris, about how people want to see that list. We did have one team call us out on Teron Johnson from Weber State being on our original watch list because that was his sleeper heading into the year. And then, of course, he showed up on the recent Senior Bowl watch list and it was revealed to all 32 teams.
Well, so let me ask you this question, Patrick. So when you're narrowing down that list and then you get to the official invite list, so that the invites go out sometime in the middle of the fall, right? So when you start sending out those initial list of invites, how hard is it for you guys as a staff, obviously yourself and Phil and everybody, Rob Lee Hockey and everybody else that's there, putting together that list and then deciding who's the initial invites are going to be? I'm sure there's got to be some deliberation and there's some debate internally about who's worthy. How hard is it to leave some players behind that you feel really strongly about? I got to think it's pretty similar to what teams are going through when they're trying to stack their board.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, as we get into the back part of the roster, it's hard to make some of those final decisions. But, you know, in the end, this is an event that is a service to the NFL. So we do go through a lot of our trusted sources in the NFL and kind of run players through them in the end. And, you know, some we'll reach out to some teams, and they'll stack a group of players that we're having a little bit of trouble deciphering. Of course, the East-West Shrine Game has players that will end up coming here to Mobile right after their time in the East-West Shrine Game. So you don't want to overwork a lot of those players, but some players are willing to do it. Obviously, getting a chance to stand out in the East-West Shrine Game gives you an opportunity to get the call up to Mobile. I know, you know, some agents out there don't want to send their players to the other two games, but, you know, from my perspective, I like to see how they perform in the East-West Shrine Game setting or the NFLPA Bowl setting if we were on the fence about bringing them here to Mobile. So the call-up is always a possibility, and, you know, it's a process. And I think the top 40 to 50 players is always kind of a, I don't want to say a no-brainer, because you can always miss on every evaluation. Every personnel evaluator has skeletons in their closet. But it's not like Phil Savage and I sit here with the 5th overall pick or the 18th overall pick and can take one guy. We can really invite everybody who we think is a first-round prospect. So in that regard, it's almost kind of a recruiting aspect of convincing the players to attend, the Josh Allens of the world, and to make sure that they take advantage of this opportunity to prove that they belong with the best. And then for the back-end roster guys, it's an opportunity for them to prove that they belong and that they can compete.
Patrick, one of our favorite phrases on this podcast is trust the tape. And that's one that Fran commonly uses when, you know, a guy might not test well, but when you watch him on film, he just looks like he belongs in the NFL. Coming off the combine and the timing and testing drills, are there some Senior Bowl guys who maybe didn't fare as well as maybe some expected in Indianapolis, but at the end of the day, you're still going to pound the table and say, this guy belongs in the NFL?
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point, Chris. I think one person that might stand out in that regard would be Nick DeLuca from North Dakota State. Of course, he's got a great advocate in Eagles Super Bowl winning champion quarterback Carson Wentz, who actually reached out to us and really advocated for Nick DeLuca. Of course, they were teammates with the Bison, but Nick obviously did not run fast, didn't exactly wow anybody in the athletic testing part of the combine, but this guy is a very good football player. He's going to contribute at the special teams level for sure, but before his injury his junior season, he showed the ability to play in coverage. They played a lot of cover two, and he played a lot in the middle of the field in zone coverage, and I thought that he could really move around on tape. Of course, he didn't test athletically well. Other guys that you can really think of, you know, Will Hernandez from UTEP is not going to wow everybody. Of course, he did have a good 40 time for his size, but, you know, this is a really good football player who moves better than it really appears that people thought that he would. So Will Hernandez is a guy who's not going to wow you every time. Of course, he had a great bench press reps, but, you know, this is a guy that really knows how to play the game of football, and I think he's really worked his way into being a first-round prospect. And on the other hand, Chris, you know, they're the guys that will test well. Christian Campbell from Penn State, of course, is expected to test really well at his pro day. Didn't get a chance to play in the Senior Bowl game and did not perform at the combine. But there are some really intriguing athletic talents here. A lot of height, weight, speed prospects like Christian Campbell. DJ Chark from LSU was our South Team co-MVP. But there are a lot of guys that will test well, too, that necessarily don't have the tape. So that's going to force a lot of evaluators to go back and reconsider.
Patrick, one guy, you mentioned DJ Chark, and I think he's a guy that certainly helped himself at the Senior Bowl this year. You talk about a player who the production was a little bit up and down throughout the course of his career, had been an impact player in that offense. I think a lot of people were expecting him to really step up this year. Obviously, the passing game for LSU kind of struggled throughout the course of the season. Still was able to put up 800 yards receiving, but I thought really kind of helped himself down there in Mobile. Are there any other players that in your mind really helped themselves most? And then talk about DJ Chark and what he brings to his future NFL team as well.
Yeah, Chark obviously with the blazing 40 time at the NFL Combine. I had him in the 4.3s, but, you know, this is a speedster, but he's not really just a one-trick pony. He showed the ability to run more of the route tree here in Mobile. And, of course, he finished the recent Senior Bowl with 5 receptions for 160 yards. Again, as mentioned, on his way to co-MVP of the South team. And I think once he was really able to utilize the speed and play free and not have to worry about can the quarterback get him the ball, you know, it really allowed him to relax and just get open and focus on him and his defender and not what the rest of his offense is doing. So Chark was certainly a big riser, especially after his testing. We'll see where he ultimately goes in the NFL draft. But we think he's worked his way into a top 100 pick for sure, maybe even into that top 50 to top 75 range if a team is really willing to draft his potential. some other guys that really stood out to me that I liked, and Justin Jones from NC State, the defensive tackle, Bradley Chubb and B.J. Hill, Kentavious Street, those guys get all of the attention on that Wolfpack defensive line. But to me, Justin Jones is somebody that had always stood out. He did not necessarily test that well either, but this is a guy who understands leverage. He understands how to hold the point of attack. He's got really good hand usage. Other guys that really stand out to me, Harrison Phillips on the defensive line from Stanford. I made the trip out to Stanford my first time going there this year and seeing that beautiful campus. There's a lot of weird statues and stuff on that campus that I don't know what they are, so I didn't know if I was really smart enough to be walking around that place. But it was nice to see Harrison Phillips in person and realize that this is a guy that should definitely be in the Reese's Senior Bowl. And, you know, he's got longer arms than we thought, measuring in at 33 7/8 arms. He was above 300 pounds. But he's not somebody who's going to wow you athletically either, but he just understands the game of football. Of course, he's a former wrestler, so he understands leverage and body position.
Well, staying along the defensive line, Patrick, one player who was at the Senior Bowl who, on the flip side, is going to wow you athletically, and that's Marcus Davenport. And he put his name on the map at the Senior Bowl. What are your thoughts on how he performed? There were some mixed reviews. Do you think it's a matter of he's still learning to play the edge rusher position, and it's just a matter of, you know, getting all that physical talent and being able to teach him the nuances of the game? What's your take on his performance in the Senior Bowl, and what do you expect from him in the NFL?
I think it was more just having him have that adjustment period and really get a feel for the nuances of the game, going against the competition that he saw in Mobile. You know, he faced some Power 5 conference offensive tackles. He faced some small school offensive tackles. And, of course, we saw what really happened in the game when he was able to be unleashed and get after the passer, of course, sacking Baker Mayfield in that first drive, in that first series. I think it was just an adjustment period. I think there was a lot of rush to judgment on the first two practices on Marcus Davenport, but I think ultimately he walked away from Mobile as the first-round prospect as he came here as. You look at other guys that come from smaller schools. Now, obviously, UTSA is at the FBS level, but, you know, a Humboldt State offensive lineman Alex Kappa really struggled that first day, showed that he could get better. Jamil Demby from Maine struggled early, showed that he could get better. Brett Toth from Army struggled early, but showed that he could get better. I think it's asking too much all the time to have these small school players come in and really dominate from the first snap of practice. I think there is an adjustment period, and when you see their growth from day one at the Reese's Senior Bowl to day three of practice at the Reese's Senior Bowl, you see that growth, and that is really what excites you about the prospect and what you can develop out of it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts of going down there and watching the whole week of practice is seeing who are the guys that improve throughout the course of the week. Patrick, let me ask my last question for you is this. Who is a player, and it doesn't need to be a Senior Bowl guy. It could be a junior. It could be someone, a senior that wasn't at the Senior Bowl. But, you know, a player that you've studied over the course of the last 12 months that no one is really talking enough about, you know, that might be that you're higher on at this point in the process. You know, for me, you know, the listeners know I'm really high on, like, Kentavious Street from NC State, or, you know, Fred Warner from BYU, Derek Nottie from Florida State, higher than I would think most people are in the media. Are there players like that that you feel really strongly about? And if so, who are they?
Yeah, you know, we'll stay on the Reese's Senior Bowl player side. And I really like NJ Stewart from the University of North Carolina. This is a guy who's a very versatile defensive back, has played a lot of corner his whole career, but could also move to safety if needed. I think he's very instinctual. He's got the ball skills. He's athletic. He's tough. He comes down and runs support. I could see him sliding inside to being a very, very good nickel player in the NFL. And this is a guy that I saw at the UNC Pitt Thursday night game this year, and he was matched up one-on-one with Pitt's height, weight, speed prospect, Jester Wia, at wide receiver, and MJ Stewart really shut him down that night. I was really impressed with everything that I've seen from NJ Stewart. Really like him as a person, too, a very congenial guy during his time here in Mobile. And I think MJ Stewart should be a top 40 pick. I'm not sure if he will be, but I think that he should be. I think he can step in right away and be a very good nickel player, eventually move to the outside and even play some safety. You know he's going to contribute on special teams. He's got experience as a return man. So MJ Stewart's been one of my favorite players for a long time. He's had some off-the-field issues early on, but I was able to talk to him about that. Says it made him a better person. Of course, that's what a lot of players will say. And here's the thing with MJ Stewart, since I'm talking to you guys specifically, he grew up a Philadelphia Eagles fan. And so I know the Eagles just got Darrell Worley via trade, and he drafted some DBs last year. But MJ Stewart once wanted to be a Philadelphia Eagle, and I think he'll be a very good football player some other guys, Fran, that really stand out. I love Nathan Shepard, the defensive tackle from Fort Hays State. Now, this is a guy who was not actually on our original watch list, but we were tipped off to him about late October. And once we got a chance to really see more of Nathan Shepard, we saw the potential that he has. I think he's going to be drafted a lot higher than people think as well. And I could see Nathan Shepard being a really good buy technique in the 3-4 defense. And then, of course, one of my favorites out there is Rashad Penny from San Diego State. I think there's not much that really needs to be said about Rashad Penny. You can just watch the tape and see how NFL ready he is. If there's anybody in the NFL that's going to have a Kareem Hunt-like impact this year, Phil and I both agree that it's going to be Rashad Penny. He's been one of my favorite players for a while either. Came back to San Diego State for a senior season to make a name for himself and get out of the shadows of Danelle Pumphrey, and he's certainly done that. And then just real quick, some other guys that I think warrant a little bit more attention are Joseph Noteboom, a really athletic offensive tackle from TCU. We've seen the success that Halepulu Vaitai has had in Philly. You've seen Aviante Collins, who was at TCU before Noteboom as well, has some success in the NFL. Those are two really athletic offensive tackles out of that Horned Frogs program. And then this is another good tight end class, which is rare to have back-to-back good tight end classes. But Durham Smythe from Notre Dame, I think, is somebody who doesn't get talked about him enough as well. He's known mostly as being an inline blocker, but you watch his what he can do in the passing game. Just go back to that Michigan State game and see the catch that he made tiptoeing the sideline, full extension. I think Durham Smythe can do a lot more things to help a team that a lot of people are giving him credit for. So I think Durham Smythe deserves more conversation in this tight end class as well.
Patrick, my last question for you is, we were talking about the quarterbacks earlier in the show, and you get a chance to spend at the Senior Bowl a week with these guys, and you spent some time with Carson Wentz before he was selected by the Eagles number 2 overall. You had a chance to be around Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen this year. Can you reflect on your experience with Carson Wentz and what were some of the things you saw behind the scenes? And as much as we talk about the quarterbacks on the field, with regard to Allen and Mayfield and the potential they could be going in the top 5 picks, top 10 picks in this draft class, what did you learn about them spending the week with them in Mobile?
You know, Carson is probably one of my, for sure, all-time favorite recent Senior Bowl players. You know, I'll never forget that text that I got from a scout telling me that if we don't invite Carson Wentz, it'll be the biggest mistake in Senior Bowl history. And that was obviously because he was injured his senior season, so we weren't sure what his health status was going to be. We weren't sure if we should just move on to the next crop of quarterbacks, but we were certainly happy with how it played out with Carson. He just had that presence about him. Of course, we love going to the phrase of him being a big school prospect that was just wrapped in a small school uniform. Of course, a late developer in high school, which is why he ended up at North Dakota State. I think we're all too familiar with this story at this point. Very similar to Nathan Shepard at Fort Hays State. I mean, this guy has gained 100 pounds since leaving high school, so he was really off the radar too and ended up at Fort Hays State coming out of Canada as well. But to talk about Josh Allen and Baker Mayfield, you know, two guys, again, that have a presence. And Josh Allen and I, you know, our relationship dates back to the Manning Passing Academy, working that, really getting a chance to be around him in more of an informal setting and seeing how other players respond to him and gravitate towards him, but also to see how he gravitates towards other players. You know, him and Sam Darnold became very close that week. So Josh, to me, he's another congenial guy. He's a pleasure to be around. He understands what he needs to do to fit into locker rooms. I think he can fit into a lot of different environments. Of course, he comes from a very small town, and then there's not much in Laramie, Wyoming as well. So he has not been exposed to the big spotlight that's about to be put on him until the Reese's Senior Bowl. And I think he handled that spotlight better than we could have ever imagined that he would. And in terms of Baker, you know, he comes with the edge and the fire that he's known for. And, you know, he's going to do what he wants at times, and he's also going to do what's needed at times. So you know what you're going to get with Baker. What you see in the media, in my opinion, is who he is, and he's not going to change for anybody. He's not going to be for everybody, but we know in this league it only takes one, and I don't doubt that Baker Mayfield will be successful because of how driven and competitive that he is.
Patrick Wu, the scouting coordinator for the Senior Bowl. Again, you can follow him on Twitter at @P_Wu, and that's W-O-O. Patrick, phenomenal work. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And you know what? One more thing about those quarterbacks. How about Kyle Lauletta, who's from outside Philadelphia? That guy, a very charismatic leader. That guy really walked around here in Mobile with a presence as well. So I think when you talk about quarterbacks with a presence and leadership ability, we can't count out Kyle Lauletta. I don't know where he'll be drafted, but I think he's going to be a very good pro. So Kyle Lauletta, the quarterback from Richmond, as well, who is, of course, our recent Senior Bowl Most Outstanding Player. But again, congratulations to you guys, Howie Roseman and Joe Douglas and that entire personnel staff. Even Pat Dolan, video, I know those guys work hard, Greg and equipment, and, of course, Coach Peterson and his staff and all of our players there in Philly. Just congratulations to all of you guys. I know it was a very exciting time for y'all, and thanks for having me.
Now it's time for Pick Six.
Outstanding info from Patrick Wu. And, you know, again, he's a guy who's on the road all throughout the spring and summer during the fall. He puts in the legwork, so he's definitely – an inspiration to all the young draftniks out there who want to get into the business.
Go check out his Twitter page and go to his like pictures that he uploads, and you could see like he posts tweets from like all the places he visits every time he's on the road, and then also when he goes back and he tries to go through film, like all the TVs he had like recording over the weekend. It's fun. I love following Patrick during the fall because he is just everywhere.
All right, so our pick six this week: the teams that control the draft. And I'm going to start things off here, Fran, and I'm going to take the easy road here. I cannot go with the Cleveland Browns.
Obviously,
you're sitting, and it's not just the fact that they're sitting there number one. Because you might say, all right, well, they're number one, but they need a quarterback, and they probably will take a quarterback there, most likely, at number one. You figure most years, all right, they get out of the way, and then the draft really begins at number two. But they also have the fourth overall pick. So, obviously, we have to wait and see what happens with the Giants at two. If they trade out, or at three with the Jets, if there's still one of those top quarterbacks available, a team might be asking a king's ransom for the fourth pick.
They have five picks in the first 64 as well. So not only do they have the number one pick, and then you really it's the next number one pick, because
yeah,
the fourth pick will be viewed as the next number one pick. They also have four more picks after that before you even get to the end of round two.
Yeah, so, the top of the second round. Yeah. So again, they're a team that will have the capital, the ammo, to get back into the end of the first round, if they so desire. So certainly John Dorsey and company have been very aggressive, you know, utilizing the assets that Sashi Brown has accumulated the last couple of years. You know, they have a quarterback for now in Tyrod Taylor. You expect them again to get a franchise guy. They right now, it seems to me, they're building a team that will be competitive and win some games here in 2018. But they still need the long-term answer at quarterback, though.
Yeah, my first team is going to be a team that I think could potentially be trading with the Cleveland Browns at that number four slot, and that's the Buffalo Bills. They're right now at the 12 hole. They traded up. They previously were at 21 and 22. Remember, they traded back with the Kansas City Chiefs a year ago in acquiring their first-round pick. So they've got two first-round picks this year. Right now they are at 12 and at 22. They've got two second-round picks and two third-round picks. So they've got the ammo. The question is how much will either John Dorsey or Dave Gettleman hold them up for when it's time to move up on draft day? And it comes down to who the Bills want. You know, if they feel like, hey, we got to get ahead of the New York Jets and we got to get ahead of any other team that wants it, and we want to make sure we get Josh Allen or Josh Rosen or whoever that quarterback is, they're going to pay whatever needs to be done, and that'll include next year's first-round pick. So there's lots of assets on the table for them to move. I think that's why they're one of the teams that really kind of control the way this draft is going to go.
I'm going to go back a little up in the draft here. I'm going to go to number six, the Indianapolis Colts, who moved back from three to six. And they're the first team outside of the top five. And you can make a case for Denver because they signed Case Keenum. But to me, I still – you know, it's a two-year contract for Keenum. I still wonder if they're in play for a quarterback there in five. You look at number six with Indianapolis, they're the first team that doesn't need a franchise quarterback. They have Andrew Luck, assuming he's going to come back fully recovered from the shoulder injury. But now they have the three picks in the second round on top of it. They have the fourth and fifth pick of the second round. So if they're a team that also can move back into the first round, do some damage. But because they're sitting there at six without the need for a quarterback, if there's a quarterback who slides number six, who knows? Maybe they slide down some more and are able to get some more assets in the draft. So I think once you see what shakes out with the top five, the Indianapolis Colts are holding there strong because they have the quarterback. They have plenty of picks already. So they can not just take a guy at six, but they can also move back into the first round if need be. So the Indianapolis Colts, already pulling off one trade with the Jets, could be in line to do more at the end of April.
Yeah, depending on if the quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, my guess is that the Colts will stay put at six. If the quarterback does fall again, and then he falls to six, then I think they'll trade back. I think
Certainly.
They're a team that's going to be looking to move again. I'm going to go with the team picking right before them, in the first round, and that's the Denver Broncos at 5. And the reason why you brought up Chicago last year as a squad that moved up one selection to make sure they picked up Mitch Trubisky, I think the Denver Broncos could be in play to do something similar this year. They signed Case Keenum to a 2-year deal last week, so he's their quarterback right now. But my guess is that they want to get their quarterback of the future in the long term. They coached both Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen at the Senior Bowl, so they've got eyes on both. My guess is that by signing Keenum, and they didn't wait for the Kirk Cousins domino to fall. They signed Keenum right away. That makes me think, and tell me if I'm crazy.
Okay.
To me, that makes the marriage of Baker Mayfield to Denver more realistic because Case Keenum plays a very similar style.
To me, we just had Patrick Wu talking about the moxie.
Yeah.
That Baker Mayfield's going to bring that edge. I think John Elway gonna love that edge.
Yeah.
He's gonna want that charisma. He's gonna want that in his franchise quarterback. I think it's a very likely marriage. And the fact is, now you've watched the tape much more on the quarterbacks than I have. Certainly, you could probably argue that Baker Mayfield is the most pro ready of the quarterbacks. But you still get him in a situation where you have a pro's pro in Case Keenum, who's been through the ringer, he's seen the ups and the downs.
Came from a very similar offense in college. When he was at Houston, he played in an air raid offense, just like not the exact same verbiage, but very similar conceptually to what Baker Mayfield played with under Lincoln Riley.
I think it makes sense. I think it'd be a good role model for him.
If you want Mayfield, you want obviously to be better than Case Keenum, but in terms of stylistically, and I think like that's kind of he's the player I've been comparing Mayfield to over the last year and a half, 2 years. This was before Case Keenum had like this great year. So I think that marriage makes a lot of sense. But if you want to make sure you get him, they're probably going to have to move up. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Denver does. They do have a little bit of ammo. They've got 2 threes, 2 fours, and 3 fives. So they've got a little bit of ammo this year, and then obviously you dip into next year's reserve as well.
All right, so my last team here, so I went with Cleveland, Indianapolis. I'm going with a team with 12 picks, the Green Bay Packers. Okay, they're sitting there at number 14. They don't need a franchise quarterback. And they're before a couple of interesting teams here. You expect that most of those top-tier quarterbacks are going to be long gone by the time you get into the double digits here. But Green Bay having the most picks in front of Arizona, Baltimore, and the Los Angeles Chargers, okay? We know what Arizona just did signing Sam Bradford, and who knows how long that's going to last, okay? You have Baltimore at number 16. Joe Flacco is a guy that, you know, he's never been the same since his amazing Super Bowl run in 2012. And then the LA Chargers, Phillip Rivers. Okay, how much longer do you expect him? You figure if one of those teams might be looking for a guy, you know, maybe the Lamar Jackson, you know, guy that you can groom and you don't have to have ready in day one. But Green Bay is sitting there. They don't need the franchise quarterback. You wonder if a team might come calling to them, you know, to be able to make a move. So it's an interesting spot with those three teams that secretly could need a quarterback there in the middle of round one.
Miami's another one, and that's why I put them as my last team on my list, because I think when you look at Miami, they have Ryan Tannehill. They just redid his deal not too long ago, but he's coming off the injury. I really feel like this is an opportunity for them. Now, do they have the picks to move up? Not necessarily, but obviously you always throw in an extra first-round pick for a future year and you get the deal done. But I think when you look at them, I feel like they're on the outside looking in. And that's where your earlier point about them and Lamar Jackson comes into play. Adam Gase has had experience working with quarterbacks from a lot of different skill sets over the course of his career. So is Dennison, their offensive coordinator, Rick Dennison. So that's going to be very, very interesting to see how that plays out. I feel like that's another team in the top half that can make some noise. And even if they don't do it at 11, where they pick right now, the ability to trade up into the back end and take a Lamar Jackson, bump another player down to the Philadelphia Eagles, number 32, something the Eagles fans can keep an eye on.
All right, so that's our pick six teams that control the draft. Now we get to your questions in our draft mailbag.
Now it's time to hear from you, the fans, in the draft mailbag.
All right, now the best part of the program, your questions in our draft mailbag. I really wish, Fran, that fans, I know fans have asked for the video podcast version of the podcast.
Uh-oh.
Did I say video podcast version of the podcast?
Good, yeah.
No. It'd be quite an interesting sight seeing us right now, because we're on a high table with no chairs, and we are so awkwardly.
I get antsy when I'm standing, so I've been like cleaning my earpiece. I've been like throwing trash out. I've gotten a lot done. I've been pretty productive during the course of the show.
I'm surprised you haven't knocked down an article or two while standing.
Little do you know, I've been working on one.
Interesting.
We'll see next
week.
Well,
I was going to say, can't wait to see it. So, all right, your question. Actually, first we're going to go to a comment.
We've got two from iTunes this week.
And this first one I'm very thankful for.
This was great.
FloydFan73 left a comment on Apple Podcasts iTunes. And first and foremost, thank you for the outstanding review regarding our daily draft podcast from the Combine in Indianapolis. But by the end of the week, I was struggling with my voice. I had lost it. Fran, yours wasn't as bad, but
I'm used to talking a lot, so.
Exactly. So, needless to say, I put it out there. I said, if anyone has a home remedy, I would love to hear it. I've heard different things over the years, but, maybe someone has something I've never heard of. And there's one that, thankfully, Fran looked up how to pronounce this.
No, he said it on the review.
It was in the review.
Kindly left that.
Quite honestly, I would have butchered this horribly.
How would you have pronounced that if the pronunciation was not there for you?
It's hard to say now because you're throwing a hypothetical at me.
Yeah, that's true. You don't deal with hypotheticals.
Shoto is how it's pronounced. I have no clue how I would pronounce it. But
we'd have to ask Bo Wolf's old French teacher.
He's the one who came to mind.
Madam, what was her name?
I forget what it
is. All right, let's go.
So the remedy is this. Shoto is raw egg yolk. I'm not an eggs guy. Little confession there.
I'm all right with
not
the
egg an
eggs
guy, but let's
gonna rock
you
my
voice.
Just down it. Yep.
Okay. Raw egg yolk with sugar and heated milk all mixed together right before bed. So
there you go. Just don't speak afterwards.
Last thing you have to do.
Yes.
So
that give it a shot, man.
I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm definitely gonna give
you
it.
Post it on Twitter.
Maybe don't do it like before draft weekend because.
Oh, you don't know if it'll
wrong,
go the other way.
Yeah, something goes wrong and coming in for a draft night, just like, something along those lines. So
you and I on the main desk, by the way, for Eagles Draft Central.
For all three nights?
Yes.
Wow. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be exciting times.
It's going to be interesting because we're going to wait till 32. So the format's a little different this year.
Yeah, the format's a little different. We won't be live all round one.
No.
But we'll release details at a later day. Yeah. We're still working it out. But.
Yeah, so we'll have a preview show. There'll be coverage. There's going to be lots
of stuff.
We're going
to do lots
of
social stuff. We're going to be doing all kinds of things.
It's going to be fun.
So, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun weekend.
All right, so the next comment here comes from RJField11 from Apple Podcasts. Before the Michael Bennett trade, and we really haven't talked much about what the Eagles have done here thus far, Fran, so maybe it's a good segue here. Before the trade, it seemed the most likely option at 32 would be to trade back. Who are three guys that could realistically make it to 32 that we could just not pass up on? So let's just talk about the trade itself first. So
go ahead, yep.
The Eagles added Michael Bennett.
Yes.
Added Darrell Worley and Corey Nelson. Brought back Nigel Bradham. The biggest losses thus far, Patrick Robinson, you mentioned earlier in the show, leaving to go back to the Saints. Bo Allen and Vinnie Curry both going to Tampa Bay. So, really, all the main moves have been on defense.
Yep, Torrey Smith.
Torrey Smith, he was involved in the Darrell Worley trade, certainly. But it was interesting hearing Michael Bennett's press conference and, well-spoken guy, very thoughtful with his answers, was very impressive in his press conference and the studio interview he did with Dave Spadaro. But saying that this could be one of the greatest defensive lines in NFL history.
It could be, without question. You go, it's like I covered it in the Eagle Eye in the Sky article. You go to sub-package, and it's Fletcher Cox and Michael Bennett on the inside with Derek Barnett and Brandon Graham on the outside. Good luck.
Yeah.
Like figuring out like how you're going to block that up, especially with just five. Good luck.
I loved how Michael Bennett said, Eli Manning?
Oh, that was great.
I know you're watching this.
I'm coming.
Dak Prescott, Alex Smith. I mean, he just went right down the list.
He's like, name names.
But quarterbacks around the league, they're going to need to be put on notice. And
sure.
Hopefully, it'll be starting with Kirk Cousins in week one in that Thursday night league opener. So time will tell. So, but getting back to RJ Fields' question, three guys who can make it to 32 who we can't trade back. They got to take.
All right. So three guys that would make it to 32 that we can't trade back. So I think when you look at it, I really don't think this guy's going to be there. It's tough because this is like a weird draft. This is one of those weird years, C-Mac, where like some of these guys we're going to talk about could very easily go at like 14 or they could be there at 30. But I guess that's the nature of the question.
Of course.
Mike McGlinchey would be one name. Way too good to pass up on. And I guess what a lot of people are talking about, offensive line to the Eagles. So maybe that would make sense. Looking at my list here, who are the guys that are just that might be too good to pass up on? So we'll say, like, I guess at a position where you feel like the Eagles are set at.
It could be set at, yeah.
Like De'Ron Payne from Alabama. That kid is such a beast. He's to me, if he's there at 32, that's
You're
a slam dunk pick, yes. I love everything about that kid and the way he plays, his demeanor.
I'm forgetting Haloi Ngata in the mix too.
Yeah,
so
sure.
We're talking about D-line.
That's what I mean. The D-tackle group is just so good. But
just the embarrassment of riches the Eagles already have on the defensive line, and the thought of adding Payne to the mix there.
Correct. I'm just looking at this list right now. You know, I think that Harold Landry, I think, could be on that list, but he's going to go. Denzel Ward at corner. So that goes to that Jaire Alexander. We talked about him earlier, the corner from Louisville. There's a bunch of corners that I think are really mixed up and are who's going to go high and who's going to fall. Denzel Ward's in there, in my opinion. I think Jaire Alexander's in there. I think Mike Hughes from Central Florida's in there. I think all those guys have ability to be first-round picks, so it's a matter of who's going to be there. I don't know. Who are some names that kind of stand out to you? Is that like to me, like, all right, so like Taven Bryan is a good one, right? Because I feel like he's a guy who's probably there at 32, but is he too good? Is he so good that
you
can't trade back?
Is it like, are you running to the table for him?
Yeah.
I think it also depends who's still on the board at that point,
right,
too. But
no question it is, yes. Because that's really what it comes down to is, all right, the Eagles are up at 32, and let's say they have a trade to move back to 40. All right, so that's eight picks down. If there are six guys still on the board that they feel really good about that all have equal value, you're going to make that trade back.
Yes.
But if there's one guy that's up there, to me, it's some of these guys that I've named, but they're guys that are probably going to be there.
That's the problem is, like, McGlinchey comes to mind, but again, it goes back to some of those being on the Combine podcast. You know, I kept throwing out the names, and I'm like, oh, he'll probably be gone.
Someone's
going to be there at 32 for the Eagles.
Yeah. Like Ronnie Harrison. Ronnie Harrison is a really good player. Leighton Vander Esch is a really good player. I mentioned Harold Landry. James Daniels from Iowa, center, is a really good player. That's a good one, maybe.
James Daniels would be an interesting one. So
he's played some guard. He's big enough to play guard. That'd be an interesting one. He would definitely fit. That might be a good one. I like that one.
So you go with that as one of your
guys.
So it's, again, it's great to be sitting at 32, but you have to wait for so much to come your way. And especially when you consider that the Eagles don't have much ammo after
to move
that.
Up. Yeah, right, exactly. So that's why
the trading back scenario is so good is because right now you don't have that day two selection.
That's why if the Eagles do stay put and make that pick at 32, we'll know that they feel really strongly about that person.
Yeah.
Like, that's the cool thing about being at 32 is that you really –
You're
really
committed
know
to that guy.
They're committed to that guy.
All right. Next question comes from @G_HAZ has 411. It's a list of guys here. All right.
I know. I love the list. I love the list because I want to stack them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stack them.
Vander Esch, Justin Reed, Darius Geis, Connor Williams, Rashawn Evans, and DJ Moore all there at 32.
I really love a few of these guys. I love Darius Geis on film. I love Leighton Vander Esch. I really like DJ Moore, and I really like Rashawn Evans. I like Justin Reed, and I like Connor Williams. So if I'm going to tier them.
Yeah, right there,
That would be my tier. Would be Darius Geis and Vander Esch at the top, probably in that order. And then I would say DJ Moore and Rashawn Evans next in that order. And then Justin Reed and Connor Williams in that order. I think that's how I would stack them.
So there you go.
But I don't think you can go wrong with really those first four especially.
Geis
would be my guy.
Geis is your guy.
But, those are all four, four really good players at the top there.
All right, next question comes from @WR1T3HIM. Which tight end in the
draft? Wilton Houston. It's our good friend Wilton.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I just put his handle in instead of saying his name.
I was going to say, I always see Wilton Houston on there. So.
Yeah, sure.
So, Wilton, appreciate it as always. Which tight end in the draft do you think could fit the Eagles' offense best from a – Let's go two ways here. We'll take blocking separate and receiving separate.
Well, so I read it as both.
okay, we'll do
the guy
best
that can
do
kind of do
yeah,
that guy
of
that can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah,
Goddard for sure from South Dakota State. I think he can be. He's not quite where he needs to be as a blocker, but I think he's on his way, and he put on weight. So again, I got to go back and watch more. If he put on weight and got better, then I'll feel really good about it. Dalton Schultz from Stanford was probably one of the best blockers in the draft, and he's a pretty good athlete on top of it. So the production wasn't great. I think he had 55 career catches, just like 10 yards a catch. Like, it was all like short stuff. But I like Dalton Schultz, and I think he's a pretty well-rounded player. Hayden Hurst, for sure. He's just a little bit older. I mean, he's going to be a 24-year-old rookie. So, you know, he started as a minor league baseball prospect, so there's some questions there. Mark Andrews has the size to be a blocker, was not asked to really be a blocker, particularly in line. He was never asked. Mike Gesicki's just not a great blocker right now.
But he tested off the charts.
So that's the thing. Chris Herndon. Chris Herndon played in line. It's like we talked about David Joku last year. Like, everyone knew he was like a great athlete. Chris Herndon's a great athlete. He didn't get tested because he had his knee injury late in the year. He's a great athlete. But he was asked to block too. So while he's not like great at it, mm-hmm. he was asked to do it. And at least you can like look and see like, okay, like he was asked to do it. He's using his hands well. If he gets a little bit stronger, you know, we coach him up a little bit and some of the finer points of technique, we got something there.
Yeah.
And then the last guy I'm going to go with is Tyler Conklin. I like Tyler Conklin from Central Michigan. He was at the Senior Bowl. He's a little bit undersized. He's like 6'3", 254 pounds. But I think when you look at Tyler Conklin, I think he can be used in some creative ways, similarly to like how Trey Burton was from a blocking standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that he's quite the athlete Trey was, but I think he can be used in similar ways, if that makes sense. I like Tyler Conklin.
And Trey Burton signing with the Bears.
Of course.
Another key loss in free agency that the Eagles have to overcome. And right now, after releasing Celek, you're left with Zach Ertz and a bunch of guys there at the tight end position.
So, Billy Brown, Adam Zaruba, and Joshua Perkins.
That's correct, yes.
I just went through the depth chart there.
Well, we were talking about Joshua Perkins yesterday, off camera, off mic, because, you know, we all realize that West Virginia, we have the most players out of West Virginia here on the roster right now, but what's second place? So we were thinking, well, Florida State's got to be up there because you have Bradham and Darby. But some of the surprise schools were Washington and Washington State. And when it came to Washington, it's like,
who's the other Washington kid?
Yeah, Joshua Perkins. There you go.
There you go.
Two more questions here. At T-Bolt 10, checking in once
Tyler
again.
Tyler Bolton. Another good one.
There
another,
you go.
Another regular.
See?
Yep.
What do you think of the safety class? I believe it's an underrated need, and we've discussed that here on the podcast before. Who's that young developmental guy behind Jenkins and McLeod? Are there any safeties worthy of being a first-round pick who are not named Derwin James or Minkah Fitzpatrick?
I think the other guy you're looking at is probably a name we just mentioned a couple questions ago, Justin Reed from Stanford. Did a lot of different things for the Cardinal in their secondary. He played free. He played strong. He played in the slot. He was asked to do a lot. Really impressive kid off the field. Really an intellectual player. Hearing him talk at the combine about his knowledge of coverages and pass game concepts and just his overall responsibilities. And anytime you have a guy that played a lot of roles, you can't be a dummy and play a lot of roles. So that goes for a lot of players that that play all over the field. You got to have some intelligence to you because you have to know your role. And if you're practicing there over the course of the week. So to be able to practice at different positions and know what your responsibilities are in different play calls, that's very impressive. So I think that that when you look at Reed, I think that that's a guy that some people may value at that. Like, it wouldn't surprise me at all if like the Patriots took him at 31. Mm. Like, that to me like screams Patriots at 31.
Guy who just do everything in that defense.
So he would be the other guy. I like the safety class overall. It's a good group. It's not a great group. Mm-hmm. I think there are a bunch of names in there that are pretty interesting and have the ability to develop into to impact players. It's just going to come down to like situation and development.
Our last question comes from at JJFree2381. It wants to know, based on the Eagles' defensive scheme and the personnel tendencies at linebacker, what traits are looked for, and who are the best value linebacker options in the draft?
So the traits to look for, the number one trait in my mind, and I don't, you know, this is just from me, is number one, they need to be smart, and number two, they need to be able to win at the point of attack. That does not mean they need to be 255 pounds and blow people up. It means that they need to be able to defeat blocks, and you can defeat blocks with size and strength and technique, or you can beat blocks with quickness and technique and being able to just, you know, deftly get around the guy and be in position to make the play. So that being said, that's tough to say, like, oh, yeah, like in terms of body type, I think the body type is all over the place. Really, it comes down to skill set. If a guy struggles making plays off of blocks, I don't think he's going to be a good fit because, you know, with the aggressive defensive line, the offensive line is then able to get up to the linebacker level. Your linebackers need to be able to navigate through traffic or play off of a block and make a play. So, you know, I think you look at some of these guys at the top, and there are some really intriguing names. Like, you know, I think Josie Jewell is a really intriguing name, probably in like that day two, early day three range. Darius Leonard, South Carolina State. I really like this kid from South Carolina State. He's a 4-year starter, was extremely productive.
What did he have, 12 tackles in the Senior Bowl?
Something like that. This kid is really, really impressive. Rashawn Evans from Alabama, that kid can play off a block without question. He's physical, he's instinctive. That kid knows what he's doing at the point of attack. There are a lot of players that I think kind of fit that bill in this group. And it's going to be interesting to see because I think that there's good depth at this linebacker group. I think last year's had some depth too. We saw some players fall to day three, players that we talked about a lot here on this show that fell. You know, Blair Brown from Ohio, and there was the UCLA kid, Jayon Brown, I think was his name, went to the Tennessee Titans. There's a bunch of players that fell, and I think it'll be somewhat similar in this class. I think you're going to see some good depth, some nice players go on the earlier parts of day three.
All right, so, and again, the Eagles, you know, shoring up at least the need at linebacker immediately, because we talked a lot on the podcast prior to free agency about how that's going to be a position to watch. Well, you get Brown back, which we on the outside, you know, people on the outside may have thought wasn't going to happen. I think we had thought that there was a good chance Brown would leave in free agency, but as Brown said, Howie Roseman told him that he was a top priority, that they were going to do whatever they could to get him back. And then, you know, bringing in Corey Nelson, a young linebacker who loved that he's taking a chance on himself with it, but it's just a 1-year deal. You know, wants to prove that he is, you know, has a potential to be a star in this league and has shown the 3-down ability in Denver. It's just a matter of now having the opportunity, and he didn't think he was going to get it in Denver. So we'll see if that comes up here in Philadelphia. So that's going to do it for us on another edition, the 101st episode of the Journey to the Draft podcast. Again, if you have questions or comments, the best place to leave them is Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or on Stitcher, and we'll definitely get those answered.
I read the two that were up there now, so if you go on right now and leave a question, it's a guarantee that it'll be on next week's show.
Indeed. So for Fran Duffy, for Brian Thomas, our man BT behind the glass, and Patrick Wu from the Senior Bowl for being our Mr. Relevant, thank you all for joining us. I'm Chris McPherson. We'll be back next week.